We are hour number three, DDC, on this Wednesday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Chris Mason. D. Mason, C. Mace in the mix as the team will head out here shortly to head to Ottawa tomorrow night. A 6 o'clock puck drop. Predators and Senators up there. P. Weber and Hal Gill will have your call here on these airwaves. I'll pregame at 5, and Willie and C. Mace, and then their television crew on Bally Sports will have their coverage beginning at 5:30, as always. C. Mace, what's going on? I want to start with the power play, which obviously garnered a lot of attention last night. I think what I loved about the power play, and Hal and I were discussing this in postgame last night, is not only just the movement, but the different looks. And you as a goaltender can appreciate that, right? Hal can appreciate that as a defenseman and a guy that killed off a lot of penalties. But whenever you're not sure what the team is doing with the man advantage, typically you know, at times you're going to be in trouble, and Minnesota was in trouble last night.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, D-Mates can tell you how much tape that those guys do in football, but hockey does the same when, you know, special teams is a huge part of it. And, you know, depending on your personnel, a lot of times you know ahead of time, you know, what to look for, what teams' tendencies are, who they're going to, you know, try to hit on certain plays. But the way the Predators have done it this year, there's a lot of movement of where they are on the ice. They're not just stationary. They're not in the same position. They're not just looking for, you know, somebody's one-timer on the flank, on the tops of the circles. But there's lots of movement with the players on the ice. And then the looks that the plays that they try to score on are different. So when you're an opposing team and you're in the video room and you're scouting Nashville Predators, you're like, well, on this one, they did this, and this. And they went for the high tip. Johansson in the slot. On this one, he's on the half wall and he's walking in, and Duchesne's in front of the net and Forsberg's in front of the net. And, you know, it just, I feel it increases your chances to make plays and to kind of, I guess, confuse the penalty kill. And, you know, it's been a real big bright spot, I think, for this team that, quite honestly, the last, I don't know, 5 or however many years has been, more of a negative than something that's really helped them win. And this year, the way that Dan Lambert and the guys have committed to, you know, the new structure, or maybe not as much structure on the penalty, on the power play, has paid huge dividends. And they've scored big goals all year long. And, going into the playoffs, I look back to that Dallas series. I think they went 1-for-15 or something like that. To me, that was the difference in the series when they lost. And you go into a playoff series and we're 5-on-5, it's tough to score goals. You need your power play to step up. So it's a real good sign for me for the Preds moving forward here.
Not to bring up those bad memories, but I think it was over. I think it was over 50.
Yeah, I think it was over. It was something like that. Yeah, it might have been over 50 or something. But it was a difference in that series.
Yep, no doubt about it. I thought Tomasino got moved up last night. I've been saying for weeks on this show when we've been discussing it that just me playing couch coach, I would move up Tomasino, and they did that last night, and he produced 3-point night. What have you seen out of him this season? We forget sometimes these guys, their age. He's 20 years old.
Well, I think they've handled his situation right. You know, he's really developed and progressed at a great rate because he's really invested, obviously, in his career, which is great to see that he loves the game. You hear all the coaches. He's a super coachable guy. Just loves it. He's got that passion and that hunger to get better, and he wants to be a player in the National Hockey League. He just doesn't want to be in the National Hockey League. He wants to be a good player. So I think by having him play on the third, fourth line, majority of the year, giving him some power play time, you're teaching him the game. You're teaching him a side of the game that he's never really had to play until now, because he's always been a top player. He's always been a goal scorer. The game at those levels for that type of player is easy. It comes easy to them, but when you get to the National Hockey League, it's a different story. And he's been committed. Like, I have a ton of respect for the way that he's come into this season and embraced every role. You know what? I'm on the fourth line. I'm playing with some big guys. We go to the net. We play Predators hockey, and he just loves it. You know, he's a skilled player. So I think the fact that they've slow played that and really done that a good job of managing, you know, his progress, I think, this season. So when you put him into those situations on the top line, this is something he's done his entire life. So now he understands the game. Now it's kind of slowed down for him a little bit. It's not coming at him 100 miles an hour. And when he gets put in this situation, you're setting him up, you know, for success. So whether he can do that consistently going down the stretch for 20 minutes a game and, you know, night in, night out, that's yet to be seen with the, you know, the mental toll and the pressure that that takes. But, I mean, this kid's he's handled everything that they've thrown at him. So, you know, he's a future top six forward. So that's, you know, that's where he should be playing. But he did a great job. He's done that all year. Any situation he's played in, he's had great success.
See, Mays, now, do you think that the team notices the perception of them, at least what I perceive, that when they're playing really good teams, you get their A game? And typically, you know, they're winning those types of games. But when they're playing against teams that are a little less inferior to them, they usually play down to their competition and then have to struggle to, you know, come back and win the game, or they just might drop one to a team that they should, you know, normally beat.
Absolutely. I've seen that all season long. I've played on teams where, you know, that it's such a mental challenge. You can go in the room and before the game and you're saying all the right things, like, hey, don't take these guys lightly. Don't take the centers, a hardworking team. They got talent, you know, all this kind of stuff. But if you're not prepared with it, you have to have a little bit of a fear factor, I find. Especially if you're a middle-of-the-road team or, you know, a middle-standings team, you can't think that you're better than you are for a second. Because I feel once you do, and anybody in sports knows this, if, unless you're like a Colorado where you can maybe coast against certain teams and you're going to, you know, get your, you know, McKinnon's going to get his goals or whatever, and you're going to, you know, coast through it and have a sloppy game and still win, you know, the Predators aren't that team. I feel like they have worked so hard on establishing who they are as a team, and I feel like they owe it to themselves and to every other team in the league to give them that game. Because if you don't, and we've seen it, this is a great question, we've seen it a lot recently and a lot this season, if you don't bring that game and that level of intensity to every team in this league, you're not going to win. And, you know, with what the stakes are right now and playoff seeding and potentially looking at you know, trying to get ahead of St. Louis, and, you know, you want to play Minnesota or you want to be in your division, and that third seed is the ideal spot. Like, what's your goal? Like, do you want to just get in, or do you want to finish third in the Central? So I think you have to kind of look past the competition at this point and say, boys, we got to get in. We got to win. We got to be fire our identity every single game going to playoff. I hope. And I expect the Ottawa game, because they play hard and they're physical, and they just saw him here last week, so they know what to expect from, you know, the Senators. I hope that's not an issue going down the stretch. But to your point, D-Mace, they're playing a lot of the top teams because they do seem to bring their A game. They rise to that level, so their schedule allows for them to get to that level a lot more.
We got Chris Mason, Derek Mason. Great segment going on. D-Mace and C-Mace talking Predators here. So, C. Mace, let's talk about UC Soros. We were texting throughout the game. You know, it was so nice to see Nashville really look like themselves. They were dictating play. The physicality was in there. They matched what Minnesota was trying to do with the fights and things like that. But at the same time, at the end of the night, Minnesota had a lot of chances and a lot of quality. But UC Soros, man, was he awesome last night.
Yeah, that's a good sign. I mean, look, Minnesota's a good team. They're a top high-end team. They made some excellent moves at the deadline, addressed some of their deficiencies. But I think moving forward, you can't afford to give up. You can't afford to give up chances like that. You know, he can't play like that every single. Well, maybe he can. We've seen him do it for long stretches of time. But, you know, to give themselves the best chance if they're going to play at Calgary or if they're going to play, you know, Colorado, you can't defend like that every single night and expect him to, you know, to stop 47 every night. So that's kind of one of the areas I feel like they're trying to get back. There's some turnovers and just some lapses that I feel haven't been there all season that, for whatever reason, just kind of creeps into their game. So I'm trying to hope, you know, that's something that they shore up right now, because when you talk about what type of team they want to be, playing hard to play against isn't just scoring goals and, you know, hitting and physicality and fighting people. It's defending. It's giving teams nothing. So they have to kind of ramp that up and get more of a playoff-style mindset, I think.
And I think it's a great big-picture question around the league. And I try to keep that in mind, Mace, when we talk about it, because there's no doubt it's hard to stop teams right now, and you're used to the Predators being able to lock down. But a lot of teams are having trouble with it. Look at the game last night between Florida and Toronto, 7-6. Goal scoring is up right now. So that is a trend around the league. I think the answer by the numbers is pretty obvious, but we're seeing things that we haven't seen in this era at all in terms of teams' ability to come back and score goals. Goal scoring is way up. It's hard to be a goalie these days.
Yeah, well, that's a great point because it is, and we talk about that all the time. I've just never seen it. I look at obviously we're looking at the scoreboard every single night and seeing 6-5, 7-4, these games. I mean, it's just crazy because traditionally every year, the second half of the season, the goal scoring goes down. It's just the way it is. Teams lock it down. They're tight hockey games. You know, you get those one-goal playoff games where teams aren't, being as loosey-goosey in their coverage and playing pond hockey. They're trying to lock it down and get ready for playoffs and do whatever it takes to win hockey games. But I don't even know why. Is it the league is getting so much better? Is it just, I don't know. Is it the way they're calling games? I have no idea. But there just seems to be, every game you watch, there's scoring chances left and right. Like I wonder if this is going to translate into playoffs because I don't remember seeing anything like this, not when I played and not since I've retired either. So it's going to be something to keep tabs on for sure. But I guess you can control what you can control and just don't give them the freebies. That's the only ones I'm concerned about.
Yeah, it's a great question going forward, too, is what are we going to see in the playoffs based on what we're seeing right now in the regular season? Goal scoring, the highest it's been in 25 years. See, Mace, we got a plane to catch. I will see you shortly in row 7 or wherever the heck we are on this thing, and we'll head to Ottawa.
All right, brother. Thanks, boys.
Yep.
All right, Chris Mason joining us here on 102.5 The Game, his weekly appearance. Predators off to Ottawa to play the Senators tomorrow night. More coming on Darren, Donick, and Chase, along with D-Mace on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Good stuff from Chris Mason. Every week is brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. Back here on the DDC, speaking of the Preds, tomorrow night, if you're looking for a place to hang to watch them take on the Senators up in Ottawa, how about Headquarters Beercade? Yes, it's the Preds Bud Light Watch Party. They'll have drink specials, a chance for you to win tickets to an upcoming game. Headquarters Beercade located at 114 2nd Avenue South, downtown. Puck drops at 6 p.m. tomorrow night. I was looking at, by the way, three more points for Roman Josi. And it is amazing, D-Mace, what he's doing this season. He's got 84 points, so he's 1 point away from tying the franchise record for most points in a season, 2 points away from breaking it. Okay, I think everybody feels pretty darn comfortable that's going to happen. But already he's got more points by a defenseman with 84. It's been 25 years, over 25 years, since somebody, a defenseman, has put up this type of season. In fact, the last time the league saw a defenseman put up numbers like this, there were 6 teams in the league currently that didn't even exist. They weren't even in the league. That's including the Predators. That puts it in perspective what type of season. Of course, this is going back to also our conversation with Jackie Redman in the first hour. Look, nothing against Makar, and I get it. We're biased here. But we also see him night in and night out. I'm not sure people in other markets see him night in and night out. Makar's a great player on a great team and deserves to be in the discussion too. But I just think overall, when it's all said and done, if the best you're bringing to the table, and I know it's not the best, is the plus minus, you're going to dig a little deeper. Okay, you're going to do a little bit better than that. Come on.
Well, I don't think there's – here's sort of the problem, but the fun part about it is that you have two very skilled individuals that are playing lights out for their respective teams, but only one can win an award. And, you're going to have on one side, oh, my guy should win, and on the other side, no, my guy should win. So, yes, there will be a loser, but ultimately, I think both teams win because, more importantly, the Preds, because if Josi's not playing this way, I don't think they're in the position that they're in, So, Should he win it? Yeah. But they would tell you McGraw should win it as well. But I know from watching his team that if Yossi's not doing what he's doing, then this team is not in a position that they're in.
You know what's amazing is when you think about it, last night was game 69. So there's 13 games remaining in the regular season. Yossi is doing what Yossi's doing, right? We've talked about it all season. Philip Forsberg leads the team in goals with 38. Probably going to have a 40-goal season. Another thing nobody's ever done in franchise history. Oh, by the way, Matt Duchene isn't going away. He's not done. Goal 36 last night. I think it was like a 1-on-4. It may have been 1-on-5. I don't know. Maybe it was a 1-on-3, but he had no numbers and still shot. It was an unbelievable shot. The reference we used last night in a postgame that you can relate to is like a quarterback rolling out to his right and throwing over to the left side of the field, which typically most coaches are like, no. And
then, don't do it.
Then Derek Mason catches it and like, yes, great job. Right? Like that's he shoots. It's like, no. Oh, okay. Great
no,
shot.
No, yes.
Unbelievable shot. He's got 36. Career season for him. Career season for Forsberg. Career season for Roman Yossi. Oh, by the way, UC Saros is having an unbelievable year. Johansson hit the 20-goal mark last night, which is the biggest season he's ever had in a Predators uniform. He had a first career hat trick last night. Tanner Jeannot is right in the middle of rookie of the year discussion for the Calder. Like, think about the production he's brought to the table. All that being said, think about all that good, and yet we're still sitting here talking about a team that is fighting for their lives to get in the playoffs. If we would have said that at the beginning of the season, can you imagine the reaction from people, the input from people? If we were going to say, if we would have told people, this is what's going to play out this year, what do you think people's reaction would have been?
Oh, they're in first place.
Oh, this team's going to be the number one seed.
Exactly.
Right, exactly what you just said. Or this team's winning the division. Right? Mm-hmm. We all would have thought that. Well, guess what? It's played out. This team is fighting for their playoff lives. Now, they're in. And they've been in, and their odds, if you look at the numbers, you know, the percentages are fantastic, right, that they're going to get in. But the fact is they still have to keep playing at a high pace. They still have to keep collecting points. There's no coasting. There's no cruising. They have to keep their foot on the gas, or they won't make it. None of us would have said that, right? Nobody would have said that if we would have told you, okay, this is what we know coming into the season, okay? Here's the deal. Roman Yossi is going to play like a defenseman hasn't played in this league in 3+ decades.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to play better than the year he won the Norris. What? Yeah. In fact, he's going to have the most points any player's ever had in franchise history. Wow. Okay. That's cool. Philip Forsberg. He's going to get 40 goals this season. He's going to go where no player has ever gone in franchise history. Wow. Okay. Well, you know, it is a big year for him. We know he's set to be a UFA. So, okay, he explodes. He has a monster year. You're not going to believe this. Matt Duchene, who had 13 points last year, he's going to have 40 goals this season. First of all, if you would have said that alone, Derek, people would have been like, I need a defibrillator. Okay, somebody say clear. I just fell out of my chair. Like, no way. Yeah, yes way. Way? That's going to happen. Shane's going to have 40 goals this season. After people would have been like punch drunk, right? Then you're going to say, oh, and just to throw some couple of little extras, a little cherry, nuts, and whipped cream, Johansson will have the most goals he's ever had since he's been here. What? Are you serious? Yeah, he will. And UC Saros is just going to be UC Saros for the season. There's no doubt. There's no way anyone would say, oh, well, this team, you know. And Tanner Jeannot, by the way. And Tanner Jeannot may be the rookie of the year. I think he's going to probably get snubbed. But let's say he's going to have – Tanner Jeannot is going to have 25 goals, 26 goals. Or maybe break the rookie goal record. Maybe he gets 27. If you would have said that at the beginning of the season, said, look, this is what's going to happen, there is not one person on our text line or phone line that would not have said adamantly, this team is a no-brainer for the playoffs. Probably wins the division, high seed, home, you know, home ice advantage, no-brainer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I can see why, but that isn't the case. That's what's crazy about all that. Say all that out loud and then say, oh, and by the way, this team has got to keep winning down the stretch or they won't make the playoffs. What?
That, I guess you could look at it, you know, I guess you can't look at it from that standpoint. I was about to say, I guess you could look at it from two ways, but I guess you can't, because if these guys are not having the seasons that they're having, led by Yossi, then this team is not they're not in the position that they're in now. In the position that they're in now, they're still fighting for a playoff spot. That's the crazy part about it. It's like all these guys are having career years. Rookies are having career years as a rookie. But yet and still, this team finds themselves in this sort of four-team race, and it's steady. Everybody's jockeying for position, you know, for those last few slots in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's good or bad, honestly.
If you really think about it,
like,
oh,
so
what we just laid out,
like, what if those guys just all of a sudden their game is off a little bit, all of them, or two out of the four or five. Or three out of them for the next handful of games. This team would be in a serious, they would be in serious jeopardy of not making the playoffs.
Well, I think what we've learned, it's a good point. I think what we've learned, Derek, is the way this season has played out league-wide, if you didn't have those things happen, you had no chance.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
The point is, scoring is crazy, right? Just look at the scoreboard. I mean, it is not uncommon. Just the other night, I think it was Pittsburgh who hung 11.
Mm.
11 goals in a night. What? Florida gets down 5-1 at home to Toronto last night and wins 7-6. 7-6 is not an uncommon score. It's not. 5 and 6 goals is pretty much, you know, the norm. It's kind of what you look around the league night in and night out. There's none of that. The scoring, like, you have to. The point is, you have to. Like, you're just very rarely. Like, it's almost now, it's like a big deal if you see 1-0. If you see 2-1. Like, those scores just. Senators scored 6 last night. Avalanche scored 6, which, you know, they've been doing basically all year. The Preds scored 6 goals.
There were five teams that scored 5 or more goals in the game last night.
That's pretty much business as usual.
Yeah.
In the league. That's the point. Like, I guess the point of the conversation is, and what you were just saying is, well, now we've realized, man, that had to happen.
Yeah.
Or this, you know, this team is, you're not in playoff contention if you're not getting that. Like, you have to have that production. In today's game, in today's league, you have to. Because the over-unders are as high as I've ever seen them in the league.
So, would that be a testament of how good of a coaching job that Coach Hines has done this year?
Sure.
Yeah.
By the way, you've kind of heard all that chatter go away.
Yeah.
There was news on Tennessee basketball front that we learned after our show yesterday, right? We learned about that. Some interesting news on another front that we'll discuss on the other side as you listen to the DDC, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coach Stack, sorry about your heels, man. We talked to Jerry Stackhouse Monday from down in New Orleans. He was down there to root on his beloved North Carolina team. Great game, but
Came up
just
short.
Just a little bit short. Back here on the DDC, speaking of that front, let's start there. After we got off the air yesterday, a little bit later, nice message on social media. That's how we usually find things out these days, with, especially with athletes. One Vols basketball player said goodbye to the fan base and said thanks for the memories for a year. I don't think it's any great surprise, right? But Kennedy Chandler is indeed going to take his talents to the NBA. And I don't think anybody's surprised by it. But, and now makes, you know, and we really, if you were looking for the true hint, again, not that this is any groundbreaking, they're like, oh, what? He's leaving? No. Yeah. But if you really wanted to connect the dots, I think we kind of saw it in the handshake line, right, after they lost to Michigan.
Yeah. Sort of his farewell.
In other words,
cry.
He knew, right?
Mm-hmm.
He knew that was it. He knew that was the last game. And well, now we know it's official. It's his last game.
Yes.
So how will that would affect them moving forward?
Well, they're going to have to find another point guard. I mean, they have to find another starting point guard. They have a guard already. They need the one to complement, to replace Chandler. And this is a five-star kid that came in and did everything that you asked him to do. And you had to have known, which I'm sure Barnes knew, that this is a one-and-done kid, you know? And
I agree.
You try to get the championship, at least get to the Final Four, but it didn't happen. And I guess I'm sort of, you know, more so this would be another, you know, check for you. How many times are you going to continue to get these five-star kids and not win a championship? Or at least get to the Final Four.
Yeah, and I
in
know
regards to Barnes, to, in regard to Rick Barnes, yeah.
Yeah, because there's, you know, there's I guess, hints that, you know, some players, some key players will be coming back, and people are excited about that. I've also had somebody the other day tell me, man, did you see the Vols? They're like, they're already, you know, how high they're ranked, and I'm like, look, man, I don't want to be the Baby Ruth in the punch bowl, but, like, really, like you're going to get excited over preseason rankings? I mean, oh, okay, that's great. You know, again, to be Debbie Downer, but, like, okay, they'll probably have a great regular season. But is that really where we are on the discussion on this Tennessee basketball team and Rick Barnes? Like, don't you need to see it? Like, we know they're probably going to be good in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
We know they're going to be highly ranked because, as you just said, he's done a really good job on the recruiting trail. He's done a really good job of bringing in five-star athletes. Wow players. Players that you look at right away and go, well, that's one and done. But who cares? You just hope that one and done can lead you to a long run.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know that hasn't happened, but it's like, wow. I mean, like, can you really get excited like this early? Like, can you really get excited about next year? Like, yeah, at this point, it's just there's a lot. I mean, quite honestly, I think the same will hold true for the Titans and Ryan Tannehill. Like, you're not going to be judging him throughout the course of the regular season unless he's just incredibly awful, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless the wheels just come off. He's ultimately going to be judged in January. If they get back to the playoffs, this is when every fan base will buckle up and say, oh, boy, give me a towel, and here we go. Let's see what happens. That's just, you know, I think Tennessee basketball is there. Now that Rick Barnes has been there long enough, and unfortunately the same history, the same pattern that he has brought from Austin has played out in Knoxville. He's a tremendous coach. Probably, you know, who knows? He may probably be a Hall of Famer one day. He's had a lot of success. He just hasn't had the tournament success. It is amazing to see how good he is and how the long magical runs really haven't followed him in 3 decades as a head coach. And I just think they're in the same place. Tannehill, the same thing. It's like, well, that'll be great in the regular season, but everybody is now at the point with 2-1 and duns in the playoffs. Okay, now what you got if they get to the playoffs? Because that's ultimately where it is. I just don't think there's any wiggle room on either one. Do you agree or disagree?
No, I agree. Do I think, in regards to Barnes, do I think that UT will, if they don't make it to the Final Four, that they'll be looking for a new coach? No, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't, even if they don't make it to the Elite Eight, they're still not looking for a new coach. If they don't make it to the Sweet 16, they're still not looking for a new coach. He's their coach, okay? Unless the bottom just falls out and this team just looks horrible, like they're not even coached, then okay, you possibly can make a change. Ryan, I said it yesterday, and people may not agree with me, that to me, it's Super Bowl or we're looking for another quarterback. It's simple. And I'm going to throw another caveat in there. If they don't make it to the Super Bowl, why does A.J. Brown come back if Ryan's the quarterback? You got to look at it from that standpoint too. If he ends up doing the same thing he did next year as a receiver, a number one receiver, why am I coming back if he's still going to be the quarterback? I want to go somewhere where I can look at the quarterback and say, okay, that quarterback with this quarterback, it's not going to be his fault that we don't win in the playoffs. It might be somebody else's fault. It might be the defense's fault, but it's not going to be the quarterback's fault. These are all the things you got to look at as well.
You said Super Bowl or bust yesterday. Would that be the case for Tannehill? But yet, Rick Barnes is, now that Krzyzewski's retired, fourth highest paid coach in the country now? But yet, he doesn't have to produce?
Because college and I think college sports and, well, that's not, because college football is totally different, something different. Besides college football, college sports is a little bit different from the NFL. I think it is. I think.
Really?
I think college basketball affords you sort of a longer. They give you more chances. Let's just say that, because turnover is so high in college basketball, one and done, transfer portals, all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. There's just a high turnover. Well, in the NFL,
transfer portal in football is impossible to even follow anymore.
But to your point.
They don't have the one and done. Obviously, they get kids for 3 years.
Exactly. Sure. Well, basketball is one and done. Now, if Chandler was coming back, there should be no excuse why that team, with him leading it, shouldn't at least get to the Final Four. Another year under his belt, another year of experience. If he would have came back for a sophomore year, I don't think he would have been on the hot seat, meaning Rick Barnes, but I think there would have been a lot of people out there looking at him like, man, if you're going to do it, this has to be the year. Your best player is coming back.
Yeah. Nate on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, as a Vols fan, I like Barnes. The Vols basketball program has been down for so long in all aspects except for the short Bruce stint, of course being Bruce Pearl. Just being up is a nice change of pace. Oh, okay. I'm not suggesting that anyone should feel a certain way.
But when do you get past that, Darren? When do you get past that thinking?
Exactly. I just thought that, I thought it just meant more. I thought that was the whole slogan for the SEC. Yeah. It just means more. I guess regular season is enough. Like I said, everybody can feel however they want. I'm just curious, like you go through all this, interest level and excitement and build up, and you look at this team. Oh, they got screwed. They should have been a 2 seed. Oh my gosh, they got hosed. And it's like, and then they win one game against Longwood, and then they're out in the second round. And you're like, okay, cool. Well, at least it was fun. I mean, that was at least the program's okay. There is a truth to that. At least they're good. They're competitive. They're getting to the tournament. That's great. But I mean, at what point do you push past that? Like, you don't have any expectations. You don't want the run? I mean, of course you want it, but why? He's getting paid to produce the run.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want that? You're just okay with, hey, it's, you know, the program's up and things are good and selling out games. And I mean, that's okay. If that's your standard, that's fine. I mean, everybody likes him. Everybody says he's a good coach, but it's like, okay, well, everybody, you know, the other coaches that we identify as really, really good coaches, they make runs in the tournament. And it's like, how many times is this going to keep happening before at some point people are frustrated with it and they want more? But I'm not calling for his head. I didn't say he's on a hot seat, but I'm just pointing out, like, I am just amazed at his tournament failures.
Well, if it's not the hot seat, it's a first you went from a lazy boy, now you're just in a regular chair. You still got your chair, but it ain't that cushy lazy boy you used to have.
Yeah, it's that one that has no padding.
Exactly.
Chair with no padding.
It's still a sturdy chair.
It's the chair that Rex, maybe it's the chair though Rex Road was sitting in.
Yeah.
When it collapsed. There in Pete and Terry's Tavern. Maybe it's that chair. I don't know.
Let's hope it's not that chair. I'm sure Rick Barnes hope it's not that chair.
John from Columbia gets mad at me on the text line every time I start talking about Rick Barnes. He wants me to leave him alone. Like, every time. Darren, please leave Rick Barnes alone. Although he just called him Slick Rick in this one. This is the first time I've seen Slick Rick. Please leave Rick Barnes alone. Leave him alone. He's doing a great job. Oh, okay, again.
That's my
that's
coach,
your standard.
Man.
That's you my leave coach. My coach alone, man. Let's going to go T.O. Also news with a former teammate of yours. Big news. I think this is really cool. We'll discuss that on the other side to close that out. Number 3 plus Jim Wyatt coming up at 1 o'clock as you listen to the DDC ESPN 102.5 The Game. Jim Wyatt coming up at 1 o'clock. Don't forget tomorrow morning at 8:45, Preds pick to click. You probably know how this works by now. You're going to call in. If you get chosen, you're going to pick a player to score a goal. If that happens, you'll win a pair of tickets to an upcoming home game. Preds pick to click tomorrow morning, 8:45 to be exact. That's brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. Back here on the DDC, Darren McFarland and Derek Mason with you. 2 D's. Former teammate of yours. I thought this was really cool. Did you see this? You know where I'm going with this?
Yes, I do.
Eddie. They're going to play Notre Dame in South Bend yesterday. Next year, next season. I don't know why I said yesterday. I have no idea.
No, you used the words they're going to and yesterday together.
You used a past tense, present tense, and a future tense all in one sentence to describe the same thing, which I don't think I've
ever
heard.
That is the best. I've never heard that.
Save that for Friday, okay? Elijah, put that in the...
I'm sending it to the Louvre. That's what I'm doing.
Oh, man.
That will be in best shots of the week, I have a feeling. Wow. I clearly was trying to multitask, and, that didn't come out right. TSU playing Notre Dame. I think it's Labor Day weekend
in
South Bend.
What is it, August 26th?
No, September. No, it's September 2nd.
Yeah, September 2nd. Their first game is in Dublin, August 26th. Notre Dame's is.
Mm-hmm. And that will be broadcast nationally on NBC.
This is a win for TSU, for Eddie, for the athletic director, Allen.
Now this is 2023. Right.
Yeah.
This is not
this upcoming season.
This is the
next
following
year
in 2023.
But I mean, if it was this year, next year, the year after
it doesn't
matter. It's still huge for the Tigers. I mean, this is what you want. This is how you this helps you build your program. Because you get an opportunity. What all these kids, what do they want? They want an opportunity to do what? To play on a big stage. To play, you know, in front of, you know, 60,000 or, you know, on television, millions of people watching them. And this gives them the opportunity to do that at TSU. And, you know, reading the press release, you know, it's because of Eddie and Alan, their director, that they had the opportunity or having the opportunity to go to South Bend and play. And, you know, what better coach to have than Eddie? Because he can tell you about the mystique of South Bend because he's played there before. He can tell you what you should expect going in because these kids never been in a stadium that big and that, you know, rich in winning championships in history on a gridiron. So kudos to Eddie because I don't think without him as their head coach, do they get this game? I don't think they do.
I'd say you're probably onto something. Well, just to put the significance to this, it's the first time Notre Dame's ever played against an HBCU school.
Mm-hmm.
How about that? This will be the first time ever.
Well, that's
just
good.
To kind of put the, you know, perspective. To your point, I agree with you. 100%. That's in play, without a doubt. And, you know, it's the same thing Deion Sanders is doing at Jackson State, right? I mean, that name and their head coach is playing a factor in all this. There's no doubt about it. Did you ever play there?
Yes, I played at South Bend my freshman year in college. Yeah, they came to us my sophomore year. But, yeah, I played my freshman year. And, I mean, as a freshman.
Did you actually play?
Yeah, I played in that game. Yeah, I was a special teams guy.
What was it like?
I mean, it was surreal because, you know, I remember Jerome Bettis. I remember, you know, Brown, guys like that.
Tim Brown,
You know, Ismail. I remember guys like that playing at Notre Dame and having success in big games versus Michigan and you know, whoever else, Florida State. You know, you're watching this as a kid, and then you get an opportunity to play in that stadium. And that was one of the selling points when I got recruited. Like, we played Notre Dame this year at Notre Dame.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. That was they brought that up on the recruiting
team? Yeah, we play Notre Dame at Notre Dame. Because you walk into a kid's room, living room, and their parents are sitting there.
Now, remember, this is 25 years ago.
Yeah, this is a long time. We're talking 93.
The reason I bring that up is because, you know, Notre Dame, I mean, just think about it. And still it does. It still has the staying power. That's why we're talking about it. But you're talking about 25, 30 years ago. It really was a big to-do.
Exactly. And I still think these young men think of it as that. Like, I get a chance. Like, we get a chance to play in South Bend. You're not going to get that. You know, at HBCU, you may not ever get that opportunity. And these kids get an opportunity to showcase, not just go there and to be a punching bag. No, to go there with the idea of, listen, we're going to give them our best shot. And, you know, we get an opportunity to display our talents in front of everybody. And as a measuring stick, like, where are we as a university, as a program? You know, where are we, TSU, where are we as a program? And I'm not saying that, you know, they're going to go up there and beat Notre Dame. I don't know. But when you go into a stadium like that with a team like Notre Dame, you're always going to, your game's going to elevate even more. And this is your opportunity to showcase your talent.
Never been there for a game. I've been there. I've been on the field. I've been kicked off the field, just like in the movie Rudy. Hey, get off the field. That literally happened. I've never been there for a game. You know what? Maybe that's my first game next September 2nd. That'd be really cool.
Yes.
Guess I better start talking to Pete Weber, see if I can get some ticks.
Exactly. Huh? Yeah. Must be in the front row. Nope.
Must be in the front row.
Hey, aren't you the kid we kicked out?
Get out of here. Get off the field. That's what happened.
What if your mug is still up? They're like, nope, you can't come
buddies
in.
We're running around throwing a football, like just like we were recreating a game and just acting like idiots on their field. And, mm-hmm. Yep, he finally found us and screamed at us to get off the field. So we did.
But it felt good, didn't it?
It felt awesome.
Just being on that field.
It was awesome. I felt like we were in the movie, man. We'll come back. Jim Wyatt to begin the final hour. We'll get back into some more Titans talk. We'll ask Jim if he's ever been there. We'll do that next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.